From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past weekend at a stop on Michelle Obama's book tour. Obama is promoting her new memoir, Becoming. She's made a point of taking questions and offering candid, sometimes blunt responses at her events. And in front of a packed house at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, Obama took shots at the ideas championed by Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg in Sandberg's book, Lean In. Now, Michelle Obama told the Brooklyn crowd, quote, "That whole thing about having it all? Nope. Not at the same time. That's a lie. And it's not always enough to lean in because that blank doesn't work all the time." She didn't say blank, obviously. The crowd roared. Obama was taking aim at the idea that women can have whatever they desire. They just need to assert themselves more forcefully, especially in the workplace. The debate about having it all is not new, but the tensions exposed this week by Michelle Obama reveal how the conversation is not going away. And there are many examples every week of how women who achieve are treated differently than men. Take the story of world soccer. Every year, the Golden Boot Award goes to the man voted best footballer in the world, and this year, the first ever Golden Boot for women was awarded. It went to Ada Hegerberg of Norway. At the awards ceremony last week, following the announcement, the host wanted to know, can she twerk? She simply replied no and walked off the stage. Good for her, but an amazing question in that moment. Now, this hour, a conversation about how women feel regarding the ongoing debate about balance, leaning in, and Michelle Obama's comments. My guests for the hour include Tricia Cruz Irving, Director of Communications for Senator Rich Funke, someone I've known well in this town. She's worn a lot of hats for many years here. Nice to see you here in studio.
Nice to be here, Evan.
Also with us is Rebecca LeClaire, former broadcast journalist, now running her own communications consulting business. Rebecca, welcome to you.
Thanks so much, Evan.
And Jen Lunsford is an attorney with Seeger and Sciortino Law and former candidate for the 55th Senate District. Jen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm just going to ask all of you right off the bat, when Michelle Obama says, lean in, that blank doesn't always work, what you made of that? And I'll start with you, Tricia. What do you think?
You know, that could be true. One of the things that I always say is that everything depends on everybody's own personal experiences. I would say that, you know, having it all is really, really hard. But at least in my case, I have been able to have it all. But that doesn't mean that you don't have days where you melt down. It doesn't mean that you don't go through struggles and constantly asking yourself, okay, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? So I think it really just depends on who you're asking, their experiences, and what kind of field they work in.
Okay. Jen?
I think that you can have all of some things or some of all things, but you can't have all of everything. You're always balancing and you're always making sacrifices here or there. You know, there's ways to do what you want to do in life, but you have to accept that you're going to miss out. You're going to have to prioritize one thing over another. And I think that this idea that women can, you know, quote, have it all is a burden on modern women.
Rebecca.
Well, I think you have to just think of your own reality and be true to yourself. And when I heard the former First Lady say that it's not possible, and she literally could have had anything at her feet when she was a First Lady, and even now as she's trying to go out and be an author and be more of it and saying it's just not possible, we all have to reflect on that, I think, as women, that perhaps it is untrue that you cannot have, you know, it's untrue that we can be super moms and super CEOs at the same time.
Well, and to some degree, I think it's important to ask all of our guests in studio, and I'll ask the listeners the same. If you want to join the conversation this hour, you can email the program connections@wxxi.org, or you can call the program toll free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to ask if you think we focus too much on gender differences in the workplace or sort of work-life balance. Sheryl Sandberg herself, in an interview last year, didn't necessarily walk back the themes of Lean In, but she said that things have been going a little bit backward for women since her book was published in 2013. And I will quote from the interview she gave last year. She said, quote, "We are stuck at less than 6% of the Fortune 500 CEO jobs and their equivalent in almost every country in the world." 6%, she's saying, are women. There were 19 countries run by women when Lean In was published. Today, there are 11. Congressional numbers have inched up only a tiny bit. Again, she was saying this last year. And she said, and so overall, we are not seeing a major increase in female leadership in any industry or in any government in the world. And I think that's a shame, end quote. So that's from Sheryl Sandberg. in an interview in 2017. Do we focus too much on gender differences, or are these important and valid questions, Rebecca?
Well, I copied that quote down on my notes today because I thought, oh boy, from 2013 when her book came out to 2017, she has kind of taken a turn there. But for your question, do we focus too much on this? I don't think so, because we are 52% of the population, and if only 20% of Congress is represented by women, don't we need to have that conversation? Like, why isn't it 50-50? Why can't we have 50% at least representation in Congress? And so I do think it's important that we talk about it. I'm sure some people get sick of listening to this and say, well, you know, come on, just buck up and do it for yourself and leave your kids at home. But no, it's too complex of a conversation. So I think we need to continue to talk about it.
Okay, Jen?
Yeah, I think that part of this conversation needs to include men as well, because part of the reason women are disproportionately expected to, you know, work like they don't have children and raise children like they don't work is because men are not expected to raise children like they don't work. And until we allow men the opportunity to stay home with a sick kid without, you know, the pressure of why can't your wife do it, women won't have that freedom. You know, when I was running for office, my husband stepped up and did an enormous amount of work. And, you know, just in the state Senate, we elected, you know, six new women. You know, we have more new women, but there are now 20 women in the New York State Senate because women with children are now stepping up and saying, yes, I can sacrifice some of my home life to pursue these other opportunities. But that generally requires family or a husband or someone to pick up that slack.
Well, as the only man on this panel, let me appeal to all men listening and ask everyone to stop forever using the phrase daddy daycare. That's just parenting. Yeah. Right. It's just parenting. Go ahead, Tricia.
So there are two things I want to say. One, I don't think there can be enough focus on this because the numbers paint the picture of what's going on. And the other thing is I want to go back to when you had asked, you know, can women have it all? And one of the things that I thought about when you invited me to be on here today is that I wanted to say, well, every woman's definition of having it all, it depends on every woman's definition of having it all. And for example, as Jen mentioned earlier, you know, if you work, you're a mom and you're a wife, well, there are some things that are going to be sacrificed. So for example, you know, in my case, yeah, I have the professional career, I'm a working mom and I'm married, but you know, and out of all of that, I want to give 100% to everything, and I work hard to do so. But at the end of the day, my daughter, who's only 2 years old, I have to make sure that no matter what, she gets 100% more than anything else. So it is a careful balance. And you're always, you know, when you have to do everything, you're like, okay, I got to get this work thing done. But I also have to take care of my family. And at the end of the day, they're all important. But, you know, the work, the family has to come first. I mean, if you have a two-year-old daughter who can't take care of herself, you know.
But do we still have, do we have a society that agrees with the general sentiment that Tricia, because everyone at the table was nodding along with Tricia there. Do we have a society that agrees with the sentiment that children must come first, children must get 100%, but is there a subtext that says they'll get that from the mom more often, or that's going to be the mom's job and sometimes dad can't?
Well, you know, women are known as the primary caretakers, and it's not that dads can't, you know, I mean, when dads have to, they do, but you know, we live in a world and society where the women are the ones who are born as the nurturing people. And, you know, women are generally known as the primary caretakers. I will say, at least from my experience, for my past two employers, they have been absolutely phenomenal when it comes to accommodating my schedule and understanding that I'm a working mom. And I can't say enough good things about either one of them because they've been so good to me and my colleagues have been so understanding. But I'm sure that in other fields, maybe it hasn't been that way.
Yeah, and listeners, if you want to share your stories, I mean, I think Trish is on the money there. There's going to be a wide range of experiences with what you've experienced in terms of support, understanding at work, et cetera, et cetera. Let me ask our other guests that same question. Is there a subtext that says, yes, your kids have got to get 100%, but, you know, they'll get it from mom. Is there a subtext?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when I was, you know, all the time, actually, when I'm with my son, I try to not multitask that. I'll multitask other parts of my life, but when my son needs me for something, actually needs me, he's my full focus. And I think that that's true of most parents as well. You know, it's interesting having this conversation because we're talking about relationships in terms of, you know, heterosexual marriages, but I think it'd be interesting to have this conversation with people who are in same-sex partnerships to see, who, especially in caregiving situations, mm-hmm. who is getting the pressure to stay home, who is getting the pressure at work.
That's a great point. Rebecca?
I know for in my situation that when we had to make those critical decisions of who's going to do the majority of the child rearing or take those responsibilities or take the child to the doctor, that kind of thing, it always pretty much fell on my shoulders because in the end, and this is bottom line, my husband made more money than I did, so I could sacrifice a little bit more because, well, I didn't bring in as much. So that's bottom line, you know, who's going to do it? Well, okay, I'll sacrifice my job because I don't get paid as much. You know, you're the breadwinner. That's how we kind of made that decision. And I kind of basically changed my work schedule so that I could work from 4 a.m. till 1 p.m. and be home for the majority of the child rearing when the kids are home from school and that kind of thing. So I kind of sacrificed my career. I couldn't just say, sure. Okay, I'll do it whenever you want. I'm on call at any time. Because in the end, he made more money. So that's the problem, though, because women still don't make as much money as men. You know, I'm kind of doing apples and oranges here because my husband and I were not at the same level necessarily,
no, I take
not the,
point.
The same industry. But, you know, maybe if I did make as much money as he did at that moment in our life, I wonder if the conversation would have been different.
Yeah, interesting. So before I take Sharon's phone call, and I see the phone ringing, so Sharon in Rochester, hang there. We're coming to you in a moment. I do want to make sure we also hit one important point here. In Sheryl Sandberg's book from 2013, Lean In, it was about a lot of different themes, particularly for women who work. I say women who work. All women work. Let's be clear about
yeah, right,
that.
Right, right.
Let me correct that instantly. But in more of in a corporate setting and sort of these stereotypical boardroom settings, there was a lot of that. And there was a lot about balancing work life. But I also want to make sure the conversation is about not just parents, because you know I want to talk about how we are as a society either progressing or working through these questions for everybody. And so let me go back around the table before we go to our phone calls with this question. Generally speaking, Rebecca LeClaire, do you agree with the sentiment that, and I'm oversimplifying Sandberg to some degree here, and that's probably a little uncharitable, but we hear this a lot. Assert yourself more and you'll get more of what you want. Women, you've just got to be more assertive. You've got to speak up more. You've got to be your own best advocate at work and you will get more. You can get as much as men. Is that good advice? Is that simply true or is that missing part of the point?
So when that book came out,
yeah.
2013,
yeah.
My daughter gave it to me, basically. She had just gotten through college, was going into the workforce. So it was a great time for us to have that discussion. And I totally agreed with it. You know, I want her to lean in because she's young, aggressive, ready to take on the world. And has no children and has no partner. So it was easy for me to say, this book, yes, she's right. And I looked at my own life and I realized I had not leaned in as much as I would have, I think, had I not had a spouse and 4 children to raise.
But would there be a penalty for you of leaning in? I mean, is it as simple as just saying lean in?
Yeah, that's too simple because I was always tempered by the fact that I was raising children and had a partner. She's free to do whatever she wants to do and take on the world because she's right out of college.
Okay.
And it is a different situation, I think. And I want her to lean in. I will be upset if she doesn't lean in.
Jen Lensford.
I mean, I am a very assertive woman in what is traditionally a man's job. There are very few personal injury litigators that are female. And I have always, you know, had to be very assertive in my work, and I don't have a problem doing that. Some people aren't naturally like that, and I think women are socialized sometimes to not be like that. So if it's not your natural inclination, if it's not your natural style, it can be clumsily executed, and I think sometimes hurt you. I think to some extent, lean in is interpreted as work like a man, and I don't know that that style works for everybody, but what I do think is valid is don't take a back seat because you think you're not as good or you think you're not as qualified because you are. And also to ensure that you don't fall into the traps that I think a lot of women do, and even I have, of becoming the work wife, of being on the party planning committee because you're the girl, or because at the birthday party you're going to cut the cake because you're the woman. And, you know, not falling into those tropes at work is important.
It also sort of implies this idea, though, that if you're more assertive, then you will make as much as the man who works alongside you, and that's on you. Fair or not fair?
I don't think that that's entirely fair. I think that there are lots of times where women don't ask for raises. They don't. That just says, you know, statistically. And I think if we did and we started normalizing that over time, it will help. But I think that there's lots of people in certain environments where that would work against them. And to say that that is a universally applicable strategy, I think is unfair. But I think women should absolutely have more faith in their abilities and faith in their worth.
We're going to return to that theme that Jen is bringing up there, how that might actually work against them, because I have an email on that. But before we do that, Trish Cruz-Irving, how do you feel about this idea that if you're just more assertive, then you are going to get the raise that you want, that you are going to get that pay equity that you want? It's up to you to be more assertive.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily always going to work out that way, but for sure, you are definitely your own best advocate. So women should always stand up for themselves. And, you know, if we want something, go for it, be determined. You know, if there's something that's bothering you, talk to your boss, talk to your colleagues. But it doesn't mean that things are necessarily always going to go your way.
Okay. Well, is there a penalty, or at least can it work against in some way? Jen brings this up, and this email from a listener says that essentially, Evan, the word that you're not using is the B word, and women get labeled this when they want to lean in, and it's easy for men to lean in, and it's easy for women to get categorized in that fashion. And that may be the way that, I mean, is that what you're talking about, Jen? Could it work against you?
No, actually, I think that it will. I mean, to some extent, women are absolutely labeled differently when they show assertiveness. But I think sometimes if you are not naturally assertive, you come off as entitled or whiny or expecting something that you shouldn't have. And I think that some of that comes from a place inside of a woman that she thinks those things about herself. You know, she needs to understand that she is worth the same as her colleagues, that her time and her energy and her efforts and her education have the same value as the people around her.
Okay. Trisha Cruz-Irving, same question. Is there a concern about being labeled the B word?
I chuckle a little bit here, because when I was responding to you guys, letting you know how I felt about this issue, what I did was I said, sometimes when women are assertive, they are perceived as, and I didn't spell out the whole word.
Okay.
The whole B word.
There we go.
So, you know, I've heard stories from women who have said that they've been assertive and then they were called that. And I know that sometimes, like, for example, in my situation, like when I talk to people and even my husband sometimes, like I may say something a certain way and I don't mean it to come out a certain way, but it's come out that way. So, yes, I do think that's very real, because, again, I've heard stories from other women who have said, well, they were considered this, but then when a man goes and says it, he's not viewed that way.
Okay. Rebecca?
I have a hard time with this one, because I want my two daughters to be very assertive and to lead the way. And I think we can be leaders and not be called the B word. And I think it just depends on the relationship that you as a woman can establish with the people that you're with. I have found such collaboration with women. I know we always say, oh, women can't work together. I totally disagree with that. I think it's really depends on the person and how they portray themselves. And sure, you can be assertive without being, you know, a difficult person. You can still achieve your goals without being labeled the B word. So we just have to find that magic way to carry on. And that's what I'm trying to teach my children, with honesty, integrity, and goals, that they can be assertive and basically take on the world.
You want to add to that, Jen?
Yeah, another word that I think gets thrown around is shrill. Women get labeled as shrill when they are, like, that raises the hair on my arms. It makes me so mad. I've never in my life heard a man called shrill. That is a female specific word. And what it means is a woman is being assertive and advocating for something in a way that someone's finding too forceful. You know, there, shrill is a real, it's a sound, but it's, I never, ever hear a man described as shrill.
And I also think, Jen, you know, when you say that you are in a field largely dominated by men and that you don't have a problem, your own personality is such that you have no trouble being assertive.
No.
Being aggressive when it's called for, et cetera. But if it's not in the personality, I mean, every person has different personality. And we've talked on this program about how students in school, introverts and extroverts, kids who are introverted or extroverted, kids who are introverted want to learn, and but they have different sort of ways of going about things. And teachers may think that they're lazy or et cetera, and there's different penalties for different personalities. So what's the message for someone who may not have the same comfort level you do, mm-hmm. to who still has to walk in the door and may think, I am not paid according to my skill, what I'm bringing into this company, et cetera, and I want that, but they don't have the comfort level you do to necessarily just say that, put it on the table.
I think people should feel comfortable, and this is true of men and women, to communicate in your own voice and in your own style. Don't pretend to have a personality that you don't have or act like you are more aggressive than you are. If you are a more measured person, then that's the way to deliver your message. And I think that when people kind of ape their way through situations, it shows.
I'm going to go ahead and start reading some emails now. This is Rachel in Canandaigua saying, here's a little tidbit I try to remember whenever anyone uses that B word. Just say, thank you. It stands for being in total control of herself.
I like that.
As far as that other words, that warrants a cold, hard stare or a dope slap. That's from Rachel. Okay. I can't advocate violence, but I hear you, Rachel. Kathy writes to us and says, I highly recommend listeners check out the book Drop the Ball by Tiffany Dufu. It's a worthy read. As women, we all need to realize we can't do it all and stop trying. Instead, realize what's truly important. Talk about it all with your partner. Don't just assume or blame. Delegate and don't redo, and use your village of support. Important lessons to teach our daughters moving forward as well. This will open us up to being able to be leaders in business and in our communities. That village of support is important, and Kathy, thank you for that. Not everyone has the same level of support, and this can be enormous if you are, you know, if you are a mother with young children who also is working outside of the home, running for office, all of these things, that community of supports can be vital, right, Tricia?
Oh, sure. I mean, one of the things that crosses my mind all the time is my husband is just an incredible husband and father. He is so, I mean, he's right there with me. We're 50-50. You know, everything I do, he does. He has no problem doing it. My daughter loves spending time with him. She actually seeks him out more so when it comes time to play around the house and play chase because of the relationship that they have. So, you know, he's incredible. You know, at the same time, I think about other women out there who I know don't have that same support system because their husbands view taking care of their child as babysitting when, like you said, it's not daddy daycare, you're a father.
Yeah.
That's your,
you know. That drives me nuts.
There is no babysitting here when you're a father. So, you know, first and foremost, you know, to be able to have your spouse be there for you and with you makes all the difference in the world. And then if you're fortunate enough to have grandparents around, as we are, my parents, for example, they watch our daughter, you know, several times throughout the week. So that's really, really helpful. So, and I think back to, you know, people who don't have a support system. I wonder what they do, you know, single moms or, you know, the fathers who aren't involved like my husband is.
Single moms, oh my gosh, first of all, do amazing work on a daily basis. And Sheryl Sandberg herself, mm-hmm. After the passing of her husband, wrote a piece saying she got it wrong in her book, not realizing just how that some of the advice to single mothers came off as trite, she thought. And she walked that back. So, yeah, I think that's well said. The concept of support.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm lucky enough to have a very supportive spouse. We have grandparents in the area. Their, you know, physical limitations are somewhat limiting in terms of childcare. But my husband travels for work. And every once in a while, I'm alone with my son for a week and a half. And every time I think, I don't know how single mothers do this, or single parents, single fathers as well, do this, because the especially with very young children who need to be lifted into chairs, you know, never mind anything else. You know, it's, they literally need you for every single part of their life. It's such an enormous burden, and we can't pretend like everyone has the same opportunities. And going back to the subject that we're talking about, that you can just be a little bit more, you know, confident at work, and that's going to change all the other burdens on you.
Mm. Rebecca?
Well, I'd like to mention what I was at a breakfast this morning with entrepreneurs, independent CEOs. There were two women, myself included, and four men. And I said, hey, I'm going to be talking about this topic on the radio later today. What do you think? Can women have it all? And ironically, the other woman said, yes. You know, and I'm only saying ironically because the other men said, well, it's their choice. And I was like, ooh, you know, I accept that because, yes, I choose to work or I choose to stay home with my children. It is a choice. But I felt that perhaps the men didn't understand what I was feeling inside. And so, again, back to that, we have to keep talking about this because I don't understand where they're coming from. I only can understand from my perspective that I wanted to be as present as possible when my children were young. You guys have two-year-olds right now. I have, you know, teenagers and beyond. And I need help raising those children. And I love the fact that I have support from my spouse. And so when they said, well, it's just a choice that the woman has to make, I was like, ooh, I don't think it's that simple. It's so complex. I go back to that issue, but it takes two spouses, the children in the mix. You know, you only have one child, Jen. Do you have one child as well? You know, I had four. So, you know, one child might need more attention at one time of their life than others. And that kind of switches and ebbs and flows. So even if you think you've made a good choice now, in 5 years, it might not be the right choice. So it's this constant flow of, am I doing the right thing for myself, my family, and my children? It's hard.
All right, let me get Andrew on the phone in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi. Hello, ladies. I was just wondering if you guys ever study people like Margaret Thatcher or Benazir Bhutto or people like that. Did they have it all? I mean, how much energy does it take to have it all?
A lot.
Do you have that much energy?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said, too, for the age of Margaret Thatcher when she kind of rose to the level she was.
How did those ladies do? I don't know. How do you do that? Do you study? How did they do it? Or did they have it all?
And I'll let them answer that, Andrew. But how come we don't ask men who are in political positions? You know, well, how are you going to balance this all? I mean, that question never goes to men, does it, Andrew?
What do you mean by balance? I don't get it. Men go to work. They bring home the money, and the women stay home and take care of the kids, right?
Ooh. Well, I assume you're being sarcastic.
I guess it depends on what kind of house.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm just saying, what do you mean by how do the men do it? What do men do already are doing it?
All right, well, so if Carly Fiorina or Kirsten Gillibrand is running for office, or pick anybody,
okay,
They're much more likely to be asked, you know, how are you going to balance this than if Beto O'Rourke decides to run for president? He's going to be asked a lot of questions, but he's probably less likely to be asked, boy, you know, you got young kids, how are you going to make this work? But if his wife is running, she's going to be asked, can you make all of that work? And I don't think it's, to some degree, I would have no problem with that kind of question if we asked everybody, but we kind of don't, do we?
We don't ask that question.
You don't think women get asked that question?
No, women get asked that question.
Yeah.
But men don't get asked that question.
Yeah, is that a problem?
Are men supposed to? How could a guy run the country and be at home with his kids? So that's the question I have about the women. How could you be at two places at once?
Well, how can men, right?
They don't. They go to work.
Right. Well, that's part of the thing that we're talking about here.
I get it.
Okay. Well, hang in there for a second, Andrew. Let's go around the table. Tricia, go ahead.
So, what do you want me to answer? Kind of like
anything you want to say to Andrew who's trying to understand balance and having...
Well, you know, one of the thoughts that crosses my mind is, you know, based on what Andrew said, is that for a lot of people, women are generally known as the primary caretakers. You know, for example, I was raised in a household where my mom did everything. It doesn't mean my dad wasn't there, but my mom did everything. And so I've kind of taken that on. Like, my husband does a lot. At the same time, though, I also am the kind of, like, take charge, assertive person. So I know what I want to get done. So, for example, I'll do A, B, and C. Like, sometimes, like, without even asking him, because I just know what I want. I know how I want to do it. So I just go and do it. So, you know, we're also in a society where I think women are known as the primary caretakers. So for a lot of men, maybe they don't understand. So they don't understand, like, you know, with Andrew, he's asking, well, you know, how can men do both? Well, that right there is telling in itself. Is it not?
Jen?
Yeah, I think, you know, this goes back to what I was saying earlier, where, you know, men need to be equipped by society with the permission to be primary caregivers without any kind of judgment. And I think, like, my own husband has no problem with that. You know, I end up being the person who brings the kid to the doctor and who stays home more often. That's just because his job, I make more money, mm-hmm. but he's less flexible because his job is more meetings and more scheduled things, whereas I, you know, can kind of come and go more mm-hmm. easily. I can work from home more easily. But I think that it's interesting, you know, hearing from Trisha, because my dad stayed home with me. My mom worked, and my dad was home with me until I went to school. And I often wonder if I am as comfortable being assertive as I am, because during my formative years, I was home with a man. And I watched him and how he interacted with the world. And I was like, oh, I guess that's how I'm supposed to act. And that some of that is socialized from just my having been around a man more so than a woman when I was younger.
And before I turn to Rebecca, you winced a little bit. I'm giving it away here, because you winced a little when Andrew was saying, you know, men don't. They go to work.
I'm going to be very charitable to Andrew. And I think what he's saying is we expect men to be able to do this without caregiving responsibilities, while we expect women to do both, and that's not fair. And then he said something that made me think that's not what he meant. So I winced. But obviously, I think it goes back to that same issue that, you know, men are not expected to parent like they don't have a job, and women are.
In a moment, we'll ask him to clarify, because he's still on the line, and I appreciate that. Rebecca, go ahead.
I winced as well. Before I was even asked to be on this panel today, my 17-year-old daughter just happened to tweet this to me. She was on Twitter, and she sent this to me. And it was just a quote from somebody else saying, "Shout out to all the working moms who feel like they are being measured by impossible standards." And the quote was, and you mentioned this, Jen, too, "We expect women to work like they don't have children and raise children as if they don't work." And it was touching to my daughter. And when I saw her last night, I said, "Hey, I'm going to be speaking about this whole issue, and how timely that you sent this tweet to me." She goes, "Well, when I read it, Mom, I thought of you, because I know I share my struggle with my, particularly my daughters. And I was thinking about that as I drove here today. I talk to my daughters all the time about work balance. How are you going to do this? You know, what are your goals? How can you work it?" And I use myself as an example of how I've been able to work and raise children. But I thought to myself, it hit me as I was coming here, I need to talk to my sons about mm-hmm. this. Mm. So I have two sons. I said, because they need to be equal partners. I know they want to be, but they really need to know what it's going to be like. And so I really need to do them a service and talk to them about this. And how are you going to do this and reach your goals?
All right, Andrew, to close the loop on this, do you have anything you want to add there? Go ahead.
I think it's unfair how much is asked of women today.
All right.
Good for you,
okay.
Andrew.
Thank you.
Good response.
Let's leave the call there. Thank you, Andrew. Before I jump back to your phone calls, so a couple of points here that have come in via various platforms. Evelina writes to us and says, "Even if it was true that women could lean in and get equal treatment, men don't have to take the risk or exert the effort. They are in by default. So it's not fair, even if it works for women." That is from Evelina. And Marie says, "Jen is spot on. Assertiveness does come naturally to me, and I am often labeled as a B because I am operating in a masculine space. How can you redefine the space you are operating in, or sort of define gender out of a masculine?" That's an interesting question. from Marie on that. So what she's saying is her workplace is also sort of has a this idea that it's a masculine place of work. Jen, she was responding to your comment saying that, you know, you work for Seeger Sorrentino in a law firm. You're in a field where it's mostly men. And she's feeling that same kind of thing. Can you define, can you sort of redefine gender out of workspaces or
and you know,
the mentality there?
I think the issue is like I work in actually a very progressive environment. Most of the attorneys in my firm are male, but there are still, you know, almost as many female attorneys. But the problem for me isn't just at work. I go into the courthouse and I peer with three other attorneys on a case who are all men in front of a male judge. And then one time I was waiting with a bunch of other attorneys for a bunch of other court calendars, and I looked around the room and I counted. There were 27 attorneys, and two of us were women, and we were on the same case. And part of that is because women don't stay in litigation long enough to be the person who gets FaceTime with the judge, or some firms don't put women in the public-facing part of a case. There's a lot of aspects of this that are ingrained, not just into the workplace, but into the industry. And I think all we can do is try to carve out our own little area so that it normalizes women in those environments. And then over time, hopefully it will start to balance out. But we can't just decree one day that these gender norms and that these gender positions don't exist.
Yeah, my perspective following sort of the James Damore Google situation, if we remember that case, he worked for Google, sent the memo, in which case he was saying that, you know, maybe the reason there's an imbalance in tech hiring, many more men than women in tech, is because of biological differences. And he was trying to make the point that some fields are just not going to be 50-50. And I think that point is correct. He was trying to make that point using some ideas that, you know, women are more prone to sort of neuroses, or, you know, they're more neurotic about it. And then, you know, the train of thought was still boarding at the station for those parts of the memo. But I think where to be charitable to Damore, to say that every job must be 50-50 is probably off base, but it's also probably fair to say if this is 90-10, or if it's 6% of CEO jobs, or if it's 20% of women in Congress, or whatever the case may be, we've probably socialized a lot of that by choice, and we're pretending that it's inherent when it's just taught that boys like trucks and girls like dresses and boys like blue and girls like pink, and that's a sociological choice that starts early. So to say to Marie, who's writing in, Jen, how do we sort of socialize gender specificity out of certain jobs is a long process that probably would take a long time to unwind, but it's not an unworthy goal, I would think. Is that you agree?
Yeah, and I think that that's happening. I think we are seeing more women. I mean, just in the time I was in law school, we flipped from having more men graduating law school to more women. But it takes a long time for those women then to work their way into partner positions. And what we're seeing, there was actually a study by the New York State Bar Association, I want to say a year or two ago, showing that women still aren't making partner at the rates that they're graduating law school even over time, because they drop out. And they drop out often because of family obligations, because especially a litigation schedule, especially people have to bill hours, that's a very large demand on your time. And too often, women are the ones making sacrifices, even when the ones making the more money.
All right. Rebecca, you want to add to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, because I hate when people complain about anything without offering a solution. And I found that I was complaining that there was not enough female leadership in media, and particularly in local media. If you look around, there's not a lot of female managers or general managers. Thankfully, now there are more. But I thought to myself, well, I'm not doing anything to elevate myself to management. If I complain that there aren't enough female managers, why am I not a female manager? You know, let me do it myself. And I realized I'm part of the problem, because I was sacrificing myself. I was focused on my children, so I kind of flatlined in my career. But I was happy with that. And I was kind of like putting it on other women to sacrifice themselves to become managers and put in the hours that it takes to be that way. So I said, I've got to ratchet myself back. Even though I would love to see 50-50, I realized reality interferes. And you have to make choices for your family. I made choices for my family. And that, I think that's what happens. Even if the society says we should have 50-50 in every field, the reality is different.
Okay, well, I'm late for our early break, and I could probably read emails from you all day on this subject. We've got a wide range of thoughts on, and we're jumping off the points made by Michelle Obama as part of her book tour this past weekend in Brooklyn. She made some off-the-cuff remarks about Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, saying that doesn't really work for women, at least not all the time and not for everybody. And we're having a conversation about that with Rebecca LeClaire, a former broadcast journalist now running her own communications consulting business. Tricia Cruz Irving is director of communications for Senator Rich Funke, and Jen Lunsford is an attorney with Seeger & Shortino and a former state Senate candidate herself. Let's get back to your phone calls and emails after this quick break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about empathy. Can it be taught? Can we get to children early and help them understand the value of empathy, how to cultivate it, how to be on guard for the kinds of response to one another that lacks empathy? And is a lack of empathy behind the rise in hate-related incidents and the vitriolic political discourse? That's next hour. We will try to get through as many of your comments as we can before this program is over. Evan in Irondequoit is next. Go ahead, Evan.
Hi. Yeah, so I recently married and graduated, and we're trying to figure out how exactly we're going to balance our careers. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but I remember an interview that Terry Gross did where one was on talking about how they took 10 years dedicated to her career, then 10 years to her husband's career. I was just wondering how the panelists feel about that.
Are you guys familiar?
I'm not familiar, yeah. But good luck with that. I think if you have a plan and you can put it into place and it works for you, great. I don't know if that can, though. I don't think you can just say 10 years here, 10 years out.
I think what's important is that before they have the child, to talk about what they want for themselves as a family and as individuals, what's important to them, and to, you know, put a plan together as best as possible, knowing that plan could change depending on what happens down the road.
Yeah, I think well said there. And Evan, I think fair question. This is one of those things where as more time goes on and more emails come in, I see that some people are responding to broad themes of you know, how men and women are sort of occasionally treated differently in corporate settings or expectations for child rearing, et cetera. And then some people have very specific stories that may contradict a more general point. Here's Frank writing saying, it's false to say that men don't get labeled for being assertive and aggressive. They don't get called the B word, but they do get called other parts of the male anatomy. Women may be more prone to getting labeled, but many men act the same way and are not getting a free pass. Being labeled a jerk is not gender specific. Frank, I would just say as a man, I'm sure it can happen, but not nearly as often. And that's the point here. So, you know, it's more of an outlier when a man gets labeled that way. And it's more acceptable for men to behave boorishly or forget boorishly, just aggressively, assertively, strongly. I think it's just an outlier. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going beyond this because I hope that nobody thinks I'm a jerk if I'm assertive
and I'm trying to reach a goal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's the issue is that, you know, men can act like a jerk and so can women. But the problem is that women are being labeled as a bee or a shrill just for asserting themselves, even when that behavior is polite and respectful of other people.
Whereas a man has to be really bad
to
be called a name.
Yeah. So thank you, Frank. And I'm trying to empathize with you. That's the theme of next hour. But I think there is an imbalance here. I don't think it's quite 50-50 there. Claudia in Greece is next. Go ahead, Claudia.
Hi. I'm calling because of I'm hearing a lot about grandparents being the support system and helping with the childcare. And I'm approaching the age of retirement, and a lot of my friends have retired. A lot of them are watching your grandchildren when they actually had other plans for their retirement, which are deferred or totally canceled because they love their grandchildren and they feel like, you know, they can't make the choice to put themselves first. So I wonder, you know, when you automatically default to the grandparent as your caregiver, aren't we kind of doing the same thing to women that you're talking about? You know, making them sacrifice one thing or the other. And I see it, like I said, I see it in my friends who are retired, who had big plans, and they're finding themselves, you know, raising another set of children at the age of 65. Mm.
Claudia, thank you for the phone call. I know Tricia wants to start. Go ahead, Tricia.
So that's really an interesting point that she makes. And what I just want to say is, because, again, I always say that with anything, it's always based on personal experience. I never automatically defaulted to my parents. I asked them if they were able to take care of our daughter, if it was too much for them. And I would watch them to see if it was too much for them. And I always asked them, because at the end of the day, my husband and I waited until we were older to have a child, because how we feel is that it is our responsibility to raise our daughter. It is nobody else's responsibility. It is our responsibility to teach her. And then when she goes to school and other programs, things get reinforced there. But we're very, very adamant about it being our responsibility to take care of her and to make plans and accommodations to be able to do so.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel similarly. You know, my in-laws are not our primary caregiver. You know, they occasionally will stop by and babysit for a couple hours, but, you know, we pay for daycare, we raise our child. I think that this phenomenon of grandparents being primary caregivers or just close secondary caregivers is a function also of younger people not having the monetary resources to move out on their own, to, you know, afford daycare. I pay $15,000 a year to put my kid in daycare. It's insane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are making the choice. Do you want to have grandkids? Because if you want to have grandkids, you're going to have to be a part of it, because your kids can't afford to work and have children. And that's not a choice. They need to work. You know, I think a lot of what we've been talking about here has been women making decisions. Some people don't have the choice between working and having children. You know, they're in a situation and they're economically required to work.
Yeah, as I turn to Rebecca LeClaire, I just want to shout out to one of my favorite people at the Mount Reed Wegmans, who I see at night, and I only share her story. I'm not going to share her name, but she's always very gregarious with the shoppers there, and she's awesome. And she is caregiving all day long and working all night long just to try to provide. And that's very different, I think, than a situation where, you know, grandparents want to pitch in and help here and there. There are times where it feels like it can be a burden. It can be very difficult. So I really appreciate Claudia's call. Go ahead, Rebecca.
I agree. And I think Jen's point of the fact that income levels have not risen to the level that you can pay for daycare. And honestly, I don't think daycare workers are paid very well. They need to be paid even more, because those are critical jobs. But for the parent paying for that, they're like, oh, I can't do this. So the grandparents are stepping in. And I feel badly. I for that woman, I said, I don't know that I really want to be that caregiver for my children's children. And
it's also important for people, you know, if you're going to have a child, you have to take into consideration how expensive it's going to be.
Right.
I mean, again, I go back, we waited until we were older because I was focused on my career. Paul was focused on his career. But, you know, the expense is something else that you have to take into consideration. And then if let's say something happens to your job, you know, we always plan for a rainy day to make sure that we're always okay.
All right, so the last couple of minutes, I'll just take Steve's email, who says, Evan, I heard you say that only 6% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women. What's the number that it should be then? I'm confused as to what we are going for. Okay, Steve, so some final thoughts from the panel. Some interesting sort of wry smiles or maybe some furrowed brows in the studio at Steve's email.
I would hope it's more than 6%. Really, honestly.
I mean, there are some jobs where we're not going to have 50-50. Firefighting. Not more men than women are likely going to pass the physical requirements of a firefighter's exam. There is no reason more women should not be CEOs than men. So, like, the idea that we're not even close to 50%. Like, we're not talking about, like, oh, it's 40, 60. It's 6%. That's preposterous. That shows some systematic bias.
Steve wants to know what's going to make you satisfied. I'm laughing at the email. I know. I understand. The tone of the email was very strange. But what you're saying is that this is not a field. Corporate leadership ought not be imbalanced.
I don't think we need to have, you know, pure parity. We don't need a quota system. But something approaching 50% to be commensurate with the population seems more reasonable.
At least double digits.
Yeah.
Hello.
My God. I want to thank our panel for being here once again. If you sent an email or a tweet or some form of communication our way and we didn't get to it, it's just because we were swamped, and there is still a lot of sentiment in a lot of different directions that we need to have these conversations. And I think the panel made an important point at the top of the hour. It's important to have these conversations, women and men, and understand the wide range of perspectives here, but also what women in particular are going through, the workplace and societal expectations and more. So our thanks to Tricia Cruz Irving, Director of Communications for Senator Funky. Thanks for being here. Always nice to have you here.
Thanks.
Our thanks to Rebecca LeClaire, a former broadcast journalist and now doing a communications consulting business. Nice to have you. Always nice to see you, Rebecca.
Love being here.
And Jen Lunsford, an attorney with Seeger Shortino, a law firm and a former candidate for office, and all parents and moms and various perspectives here. Jen, thanks to you as well.
Anytime.
All right. Wow. Okay, short break, and we're going to change directions. Talking empathy next.